Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing this week? I hope, as always, that you are well, healthy, and happy. Let's see, what's going on over here? Things are pretty good. Classes have started again. The kids have come back. They're a little reluctant to do their studies, of course, because summer vacation just ended, and it really does take a while to ramp up back into the school year, but we're doing our best with them. In the world of books, what's going on? Well, I read the first wave of the new DC Comics reboot last week. It was pretty good. There were some high points. There were some low points. There were some funny moments, interesting things, and I'm looking forward to picking up the next wave, which I should be able to download tomorrow morning when I wake up. It's a nice thing to wake up to. In other news, I found out that Subterranean Press is doing a nice hardcover, kind of limited edition re-release of Barry Hughart's Number 10 Ox and Master Lee series, which is excellent. So if you really want that book, and you really, really do, head over to Subterranean Press at, of course, subterraneanpress.com. Check it out. It seems like a really good book, one that you should get. I'm looking forward to reading the other stories. As you may remember, I read Bridge of Birds, and I loved it the moment I read it, so I'm hoping that the rest are just as good. In bad book news, however, and this does break my heart, it turns out that Orson Scott Card has decided to rewrite Hamlet. I know, that's what I was thinking, of course, was, really, Hamlet? Well, thank God somebody took that stinker and finally cleaned it up. But Card apparently has rewritten it, and the article that I read makes it look kind of, what's the word? Bad. Bad. Not the least of which, aside from making Hamlet kind of more emotionally disconnected than he actually is, toning down the crazy a bit, a big part of the plot apparently is that Hamlet's father was a big old gay king, and his big old Danish gayness eventually got him murdered because he was murdered by Horatio, whom the old king buggered. And I think Rosencrantz and Guildenstern too were some of the king's boys, and basically being gay means you get to be dead and evil. So thank you, Orson Scott Card. We really appreciate that, and once again, I'm caught in that horrible, horrible bind of really liking some of his books and really not being able to stand him as a person. What are you going to do? Anyway, that's not what this week is about, though. We're not talking about that. We're talking about something good this week. I gave you a hint last week that I thought was pretty good and pretty clear, and a couple people got it, which made me very happy. Just before I started recording this podcast, I got a message over Twitter from my friend Marissa, and she asked, is it The Shining? And she is correct. However, Marissa, and you should be very proud of yourself, Marissa was not the first one to guess it. The first one was from, of course, the lovely and talented Kion Wolf over at WNPR. And she got it right. She posted it up on the Facebook wall. It's got to be The Shining. So, the Kion Wolf. There we go. We have celebrity status on the podcast, or listening to the podcast. And if you don't know who Kion Wolf of WNPR is, well, then, you're missing out. Anyway, it is, in fact, The Shining by Stephen King. All right, now I'm going to pick on Jack Nicholson here, but I'm pretty sure he can take it. I mean, if I get an angry email from him, I will let you know. And I'm also going to take a couple of shots, maybe, at Stanley Kubrick, who's dead and can't defend himself, although I can probably count on at least a few of his loyal followers getting angry at me in his stead. Basically, my goal in writing this review is to encourage you to completely ignore the film version of The Shining and appreciate the book. Now, to be fair, the film and the book really are two very different beasts. They share a basic storyline, that is true, and they share some characters, but they're looking at the story from very different points of view. The film did create some iconic moments. Danny running his big wheel down the hallway, the elevator vomiting blood, and of course, here's Johnny! Which, of course, is not at all outdated, yeah. Note to filmmakers, no matter how brilliant you think you are, pop culture references have a very short shelf life. Avoid them. But honestly, I think Kubrick's film kind of misses the point of the book, which really, really disappointed me. But this is not a movie review, so let's shut up about that for a little while. We'll come back to it, though. Now, this book is one of King's earliest, written in 1977, and like so many of his early works, it really is one of his best. It's a tale of a hotel that's more than just haunted. It is possessed. It's a place that has been witness to all kinds of evil, inhumanity, and malice, and the spirits that inhabit it are always looking for company. So allow me to present to you Jack Torrance A once promising writer, a former teacher, and an alcoholic, Jack is a man whose life is on the edge of collapsing. After being fired for beating the daylights out of one of his students, the job as caretaker for the Overlook Hotel is, as far as he's concerned, the only thing keeping him and his family from complete destitution and shame. Now let's be clear about this right up front. Jack, this is Jack Torrance, mind you, not Jack Nicholson, Jack loves his family. He loves his wife, Wendy, even if she does get under his skin from time to time, and he is utterly devoted to his son, Danny. He knows that his own upbringing with an abusive, alcoholic father did not prepare him to be a good head of household. He knows that his own drinking problems led to the breaking of his son's arm, an incident which very nearly destroyed his marriage. He knows, or at least he believes, that he can change. That is why he took the job at the Overlook, in order to have some time to reset, spend sober time with the family, finish the play he's been working on, take a breather, and get ready to rebuild their lives. Now, the Overlook is one of the premier hotels in Colorado. It's a place that just exudes luxury with a history stretching back to the early 1900s, and it's everything a person vacationing in the Rockies could want. But because it is perched up in the mountains, it has to close down for the winter. I mean, no sane person would drive up there when the snow really got started, so the need arose for a live-in caretaker to make sure the place doesn't succumb to the elements. It's a lonely and perilous job, miles away from help and civilization, but the right kind of person can probably do it. The thing is, Jack might have been able to manage. If the hotel weren't the vessel for some evil, malevolent entity that thrived on the horrible things that men do to each other. For lack of a better phrase, the hotel is psychically charged. Memories permeate it, making it haunted on nearly every level. Normal people can't really perceive this. They might feel uneasy in a certain room or hear some strange sounds at night, but if you're a garden variety person, you won't notice a thing. 5-year-old Danny Torrance, however, is not a normal person. He has the shine, as it's called, a psychic ability of great and wondrous strength. He can read his parents' emotions, he can predict the future and see the past. While his power is not fully under his control, he knows that he's not like other children. His is a unique mind, and it is this power, this shine, that both dooms him and saves him. And as a note to those of us who have read The Dark Tower, don't you think that Danny would have made a great breaker? Oh, I wish that King had hit on that. Anyway, the hotel knows this too. It wants to use Danny to power itself, to perpetuate its evil, but it can't get to Danny, so it gets to Jack. It preys on his weaknesses, and Jack Torrance has, oh, so many weaknesses, and it uses him as a tool to destroy his own family. Truly, this is a really creepy book. The descriptions are careful and evocative, and when King wants you to be scared, you can be damn sure that you'll be scared. It is cabin fever in book form, and the longer you read it, the more you can feel the hotel just pressing in on you from the pages. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy, the slow destruction of what could have been a good and happy family, had they just not come to this place. I mean, to be fair, Jack Torrance was not a very good human being to begin with, and the odds are good that he would have ruined his family eventually. Under the roof of the Overlook, though, he never even had a chance. As you read, you realize that while it's hard to like Jack, you can certainly understand him. And that's why I like the book better than the movie. The film makes Jack the villain. It makes him into a guy who snaps under the pressure of not drinking, of not being able to write, and having a wife played by Shelley Duvall who could have been replaced with that painting The Scream on a stick to just as much effect. In the end, it's Jack who betrays his family, Jack who tries to murder his wife and son, and Jack who dies frozen in the hedge maze. The thing is, that's not how King wrote it. While Jack certainly is not redeemed by the end of the book, it's clear that the person who was chasing Danny through the halls with the croquet mallet, the person who nearly bludgeoned Wendy and Holleran to death, was not Jack Torrance. He may have looked like him, but what was doing all the evil was the thing that had defeated Jack. It was the thing that had killed him. And I think that story, about a man who was just not strong enough to resist a far greater power, that's more interesting than a guy who just goes nuts. Jack's character in the book is far more nuanced and deep than I thought he was in the film, and it saddened me to see him pressed into two dimensions. And again, I think that Jack Nicholson, while perhaps adequate for the role as Kubrick saw it, was not the Jack Torrance that I saw in this book. As an aside, by the way, I thought the TV miniseries that came out several years ago was much closer to the book and, thusly, better. True, it lacked a lot of Kubrick's more famous directorial panache, but since A, Kubrick just ruined the movie, in my opinion, and B, I'm not really a fan of Kubrick anyway. I didn't hold that against ABC Television. The book wasn't written, I think, with a lot of deeper meaning in mind. I mean, I'm sure King would be the first one to admit that. It's kind of a psychological study of how to turn a weak person into a bad person and how much pushing it would take to make a man go evil. It looks at the bad choices we make and how we fool ourselves into making them. Jack Torrance is a cautionary tale against self-pity and self-delusion. Jack views himself as a perpetual victim, held back by his upbringing, held back by his wife and his alcoholism. Nothing that goes wrong in his life is actually his fault, at least not according to Jack. Had he taken responsibility for his actions and his errors, he might have withstood the Overlook's attack. And again, as another aside, Jack is kind of a stand-in for Stephen King himself, who, as a writer and a teacher, had his own struggles with alcoholism early in his career. So the big question for this book is this. Was any other outcome possible? Did the Torrance family have any choice in what happened to them, or were they doomed from the moment they set foot in the hotel? I vote for the latter. While they certainly had their chances, many chances, to get out and escape the horrible future that was bearing down on them, it was clear that that was never going to happen. Jack was a man who was far too weak, too selfish, and too self-absorbed to let himself leave the Overlook. And so, they were doomed. The fact that anyone got out of there at all was a miracle. Now, this is, of course, part of the Stephen King required reading set. If you're going to read any Stephen King at all, you need to read this one. It is a horror book that will stay with you for a very long time. So let me give you a quote. I picked this one up. Comes up kind of early in the book after they've gotten to the Overlook and before things start going weird. Jack is on the phone to his agent, I think, or his AA sponsor or somebody. I don't know, a friend. I don't remember. And the friend asks, hey, how's it going there? And he says, well, the boiler's okay, and I haven't even gotten around to murdering my wife yet. I'm saving that until after the holidays, when things get dull. So that is Jack Torrance doing a little bit of foreshadowing for himself in The Shining. So yes, it is really very good. I much prefer it to the film, and like I said, I'm not a Kubrick fan, so that's not surprising. All right, so I thought about next week's book, and I looked at my list of reviews that I've got on deck, and I realized that I've got another book that was turned into a movie that starred Jack Nicholson where I thought he ruined the part. So, if you can guess what that is, that's next week's book, all right? Thank you very much for coming by. I appreciate it as always, and I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.